Welcome to the Betrothal Guys podcast. I'm Joshua, here with my wife Leela, and today we're talking about betrothal. Explain it to me like I'm six. In other words, explaining it in a very simple way to understand what do we mean by biblical betrothal.
If you're new here to our podcast, this would be the perfect episode to start with. We're going to try to explain the basics of what it is we're promoting and what we are recommending and what we believe in the simplest way we can and the quickest. We do have other episodes coming where you can learn more about biblical betrothal and more of the fine details. But in this one, we're just going to talk about just the basics of biblical betrothal.
Right. And I don't know if we'll quite make it intelligible for a six-year-old because there are some complex topics, but we're going to get as close as we can on that and try to make it as easy to understand as possible and why we're promoting it.
This is something we are finding in the Bible. And the Bible is a little hard to understand in that a lot of the information is scattered throughout multiple books. You kind of have to put pieces together to understand what it's telling you. And I think betrothal is one of those things. You don't just find a chapter on betrothal. This is how you get betrothed. There's no nice handy-dandy book of first
marriage covenant.
Yeah, there's no whole chapter on that topic. You have to find verses here and there and put them together.
Right, but when you do that and you go through all the Bible, and if you spend a lot of time reading through the Bible over and over, you'll eventually see a lot of them, especially as you have the topic on your mind. There actually is a lot about it in the Bible. There's a lot about marriage and by extension, a lot about betrothal in the Bible.
And if you hear us say something you think is not supported in the Bible enough, we would like to hear from you and have you explain to us why you see it that it's not supported. We don't want to continue to teach things that are not true, so please do contact us and challenge us or leave us a comment with something that doesn't make sense. Although you might want to read some of our other resources on our website, betrothalandwedding.com, and make sure that you fully grasp where we're getting this idea from before you contradict it.
Yeah, and we're happy to answer questions if something's in there, like, where did that come from? Usually we have an idea of where we're coming from with it, and then you can check that out.
We're happy to share the Bible verses that we're getting it from, or our logical
progression from some Bible verse or passage or something.
So the very basic is, really this is a question of what makes people married when it comes down to it, and that's something that I see a lot of confusion about on social media in Christianity. It's starting to break down to the point where people question the very basics of what makes a man and a woman, a husband and wife.
Yeah.
What makes a marriage covenant? And that is what biblical betrothal is a marriage covenant.
Betrothal is the point at which you become husband and wife. That's what it is in the Bible. You'll see betrothed couples who aren't yet moved in together. They haven't celebrated a wedding feast, but they're called husband and wife. When you see two people and they say they're husband and wife, what do you think of? What makes you say, okay, so now I know? What context does that give you? Then you know that they did something. They made an agreement with each other to become husband and wife. When you hear someone say they're husband and wife, you know, you can say, okay, so that's what they did. We're calling that the covenant, or in Scripture it can be called the covenant, can be called betrothal. It's where they made an agreement to become husband and wife, and now they are husband and wife. It's a matter of, making an agreement, making a covenant. Some people will call it marriage vows. Some people will call it, covenant before God. There is not really a formula for exactly what you have to say for a covenant like that. If you say, I take you as my wife, I take you as my husband, at that simplistic level, honestly, even just two people that are saying, yeah, this is my wife, this is my husband, they are, in effect, declaring a covenant just with those words.
Or if you say, I am your wife.
Yes.
I am your husband.
Right.
It doesn't really matter what the exact words are. It just is pretty clear that at its very basic level, to become a husband and wife requires two people acknowledging that they're husband and wife.
Right. They need to, acknowledge it. A lot of times people will solemnize it with a written ketubah or a written contract or a government marriage license, which is also a written form. And that's a matter of record keeping, but it isn't, and it is a good thing to have. It's always nice to have proof of, to those who doubt. It's always nice to have a written proof, but it's not necessarily a requirement in the eyes of Scripture that it be written.
Yes, if you were on an island and you didn't have any paper, right, you know, or anything to carve onto, you wouldn't have to do that. You could still be married just with the spoken covenant.
The spoken word. And in Malachi, it says, Yahweh, God, is the witness of your wife by covenant. And so it is a covenant that you make with the other person. It's not really a covenant necessarily that you make with God. It's a covenant that you make with the other person, but you do it in God's presence, and he is the witness. You know, he sees that you have made this agreement, and that makes you betrothed. That makes you husband and wife.
Like the paper witness, having human witnesses is also a good idea. Although it doesn't, yes, say specifically you have to have witnesses, because I think that verse in Malachi isn't implying that even if there was no other witness, God, right, saw it.
Right. And if you're out there telling people, this is my wife, hey, we're married, those people are now witnesses also, mm-hmm, that you have spoken this with your words. Mm-hmm. And really, a covenant is a giving of your word. And in Scripture, that's a very important concept, that you give your word and you keep your word. Mm-hmm. That your yea be yea, that's the word that Yeshua said, that Christ said when he was on earth, is that when you say you're going to do something, you need to do it. Blessed is he who swears to his own hurt and changes not, it says in the Psalms.
Mm-hmm. Even though we're saying that this is the base requirement, and so you don't have to have written and you don't have to have witnesses, there are people who are running into problems with someone talking them into doing a betrothal in private, giving their word to be husband and wife in private for some reason. But there's a little problem there, because some of them are then later saying that they weren't actually married.
Yes, with some of them, don't have a witness. With some of them, it's a way to basically seduce, and mm-hmm, it's a dangerous thing. So if it's not necessary, like you're stuck on a desert island or something like that, for you to not have witnesses, then it makes a total sense to have witnesses. There's no reason not to have witnesses, yeah, in a modern society.
You should be excited about, yeah, people knowing that you're getting married.
Yes, if you aren't,
it's not a secret.
Yeah, if you aren't excited for the world to hear your declaration that you're husband and wife, if you're not ready to say, I'm committing to this to you before God and before witnesses, if you're not ready to do that, then that's, you're not probably ready
to get married.
For marriage. This isn't really...
How, yeah, committed are you? You have to start wondering how committed the other person is, that's really true, if they want to have a secret betrothal.
Yeah, it would be something you say, why? You know, there needs to be a really good reason for that, and usually the reasons fall short.
Mm-hmm. First, betrothal is a marriage covenant. And the word betroth is a old word that is saying, I've given my troth, which means I have made my promise to someone. I have made my agreement.
Your truth, mm-hmm, in a way. I've told you the truth. This, mm-hmm, is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it's a very old-fashioned word now. And a lot of people use it now to mean engaged, but in the biblical context, it doesn't mean engaged. It's people who are actually have fully become husband and wife by fully in their word-giving, not fully in living together.
So another aspect of this betrothal, the covenant, is that throughout Scripture we see giving in marriage and the father giving his daughter in marriage. We also see passages where he can refuse to give her in marriage even after there's been a fornication that would normally require a marriage between the two. If he's alive and, you know, over his single daughter, then he can say, no, she's not going to marry you. So in other words, he can give her in marriage or he can refuse to give her in marriage. We see in Numbers 30 that even her vows that she makes on the first day that he hears them, he can cancel those. Mm-hmm. So essentially, without a girl's father agreeing to her marriage, it wouldn't qualify, because he could either cancel her vow or he could choose to not give her in marriage. So a father can essentially keep his daughter from marrying by one of those methods, by refusing to give her in marriage or by canceling her vow. And so having her father on board, if he's alive, is an important aspect of that covenant. And that's why in our traditional marriage ceremony, the officiant asks, who gives this woman in marriage? They don't ask anything about who gives the man in marriage. They say, ask, who gives this woman in marriage? And usually the answer is, her mother and I do, from her father. That's why her father walks her down the aisle. He's giving her in marriage. And it's a public sign that he is, you know, on board with this covenant.
it's not like the father has to be there in order to get betrothed, but he can definitely be an obstacle to getting betrothed.
Yeah.
So if he is there and interested in his daughter, you're going to have to talk to him about it. This is like not necessarily what makes you betrothed, but it's ways that can keep you from being betrothed. There are other ways too. Like for instance, if they're already married.
Yeah. If she's already married to someone else, then she can't really marry.
Mm-hmm.
When the father gives her in marriage at the wedding ceremony, that's a common tradition. Though actually the wedding ceremony that we have today, the modern wedding ceremony, is the betrothal.
Mm-hmm.
In history, that aspect of who gives her in marriage, the father does, who, and you're making your vows to each other, you're taking each other as husband and wife. At the end of it, they say, I pronounce you man and wife, or introduce you as Mr. and Mrs., you know, whoever. That is a betrothal ceremony. That is something that in past, you know, past generations, that type of stuff, not necessarily that exact formula, but that type of stuff would have been done well before the couple moved in together.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a betrothal, not what is often called a wedding.
Yes. When people get engaged now is when people used to get betrothed and would actually become fully committed.
The fact that we're only doing it like hours before the couple goes on their honeymoon to consummate their marriage now is kind of a new thing. That's not what we see in the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's not the picture that even that we have painted, where right now we're betrothed to Yeshua, and it's been a while since we were betrothed, but we haven't yet moved in to the house that he's prepared for us. That's in the future. That will be the wedding.
But he's fully committed to us as our actual bridegroom.
Right.
And
we are the bride and he is the bridegroom. We are husband and wife, but we haven't moved in together. Mm-hmm. And so there's the betrothal aspect, there's the covenant making, and then there's the consummation of that when the couple moves in together.
And that's what wedding means.
That's
it used to be, yeah. Even when they moved it to all happening on the same day, in the Jewish ceremony, they still separate the two aspects, the betrothing and then the taking.
Yeah.
And then the Catholics did too in their ceremonies. They still had a separation between the betrothing and then now you take your bride and you wed her.
Yeah.
And in the Bible, they still had those two parts to a wedding too. You see, if you betroth a wife, there's a Bible where it says if anybody's betrothed a wife and hasn't taken her yet, he needs to go do that before he goes to war.
Yeah.
So they had this two parts to becoming a husband and wife. The first part is what makes you husband and wife, really. But the second part is like what we call consummation, which means the finishing
or the
completing.
The moving in together, yeah.
That's when people move in together and start living the physical part of being husband and wife.
Yeah.
Basically, husbands and wives become husbands and wives in their mind and their heart first, and then they become husband and wives in their
physical,
in their bodies.
Yeah, in their bodies.
We become husband and wife in their bodies second, and we see that, like you were pointing out in the Revelation, when our Messiah comes back to get us, we'll finally get to live with him.
Yeah.
We won't have this separation. We're still his bride in our mind and our heart, but we're not together with him.
Right. We are his. We belong to him.
Mm-hmm.
He has another aspect. He has purchased us. He paid for us with his own blood. It's a bride price, is a common that you see in some of the older places in the Bible. It's a common indicator that this price has been paid to the woman's father, again, showing his consent. He accepts the bride price. He says, yes, I am giving this woman in marriage. It's not really a buying, and we'll go more into this in our bride price video, but there is this aspect of there's something given, a token of value to say, I want her, and a token of value accepted by the father saying, I'm giving her. And so just to make sure, in some ways, because then when you go back as a record, you can say, are these two really married? And you say, yes. I mean, I gave him this bride price and he took it. And the witnesses will say, yeah, they're married. We saw it. And so it's another one of those things where it becomes a point that you can point to and say, see, this is when it happened.
Mm-hmm. And we see all the way back to Adam. To get his wife, he had to give something first. Mm-hmm. He had to give his rib. And we see it later all through the Bible. The man had to give something to get his wife.
Yes.
And it was important because I think before they even realized that's what it was doing, it points a picture of, like you said, the Messiah.
Yes.
Who gave massively to get his bride.
Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence that it was taken from Adam's side to get his bride, and that Yeshua, the final wound, was the spear in his side to get his bride.
Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the third thing we need to bring up about to explain the basics of betrothal. Betrothing is making an agreement to be husband and wife mm-hmm. that makes you a husband and wife.
Yeah.
Just write that. That's that simple. In God's eyes, you are husband and wife. If you're eligible to say you are and you say you are, there you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some you know, things that can happen. Like the dad can be an obstacle to that and say, no, I don't approve of this
yes.
agreement. He does have the ability and the responsibility to enforce or not his daughter's vow. He can't really enforce it, but he can.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think that the Bible really says you can do forced marriages.
No, it doesn't seem to. The even just the very aspect that we consent, you know, Yeshua draws us to him, but we consent and we say, yes, I'll be your bride. I think that picture itself just shows us that the bride is on board with it. That you can't say, well, yep, she's married to him now, even though she doesn't want to be. I don't think a thing that we see in the scripture.
Yeah, we should probably clarify that it's not an agreement between the father and the son-in-law, like you see in some cultures. It was an agreement between the bride and the bridegroom.
Yeah, and there's maybe kind of a separate connection between the bridegroom and the bride's father,
mm-hmm.
where you know, he agrees to give and he agrees to take, but the covenant itself, the covenant of marriage, is made with the woman. And we can see that there's a couple places we can see that, but one specific place is in Ezekiel.
I mean, one of the easiest ways to prove it is widows were able to get married.
Yeah, widows
on their own behalf. They didn't need to have a father to make the agreement for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the agreement part of betrothal. That's the actual betrothal. And then we have the agreement with the father about bride prices, or just the approval of the father.
Right. I don't know that there has to be a bride price. I think a father can waive that. It's a beautiful picture to paint, but you know, of Yeshua. But when that's left out, I don't know that that's not an obstacle to the marriage, really.
Yeah, we don't see a verse that says you can't be married without a bride price.
Right.
It seems like it is possible. It, in my mind, it's a little questionable because, like I said, we see all the way back to Adam. I think that basically my opinion at this point in time, I may change it later, is that you are a husband and wife without a bride price, but it would have been better to do one.
Yeah, I mean, even things like the exchanging of rings and stuff, that has evolved from the bride price
idea.
I
know, and it's kind of interesting. We still have this idea that there needs to be an exchange of something.
Yeah.
Especially from the groom's side. Almost every culture does it. And it's just a little suspicious to me that may be way more important than we think of it as being. But it might just be important because it paints a picture.
Yeah.
It might not be an actual requirement.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go so far as to say, okay, you guys didn't exchange anything, so you're not really married.
No, I don't. I think that the bride price can be waived. I think it's better when it's there for the picture and for the certainty. But...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the proof kind of level.
The witnessing. It's another witness, really.
It's a witness. I think it's good for that, but I don't think that... I think that it can be waived. Not a huge deal if it wasn't involved.
Mm-hmm. Explain it to me like I'm six. The next thing we should probably talk about is the time you spend betrothed. And why is that?
Yes, yeah, so some people say, so what, if you've already made your vows to each other, why not immediately move in together? And the answer to that is that is a time of preparation and of growing closer to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You want to practice everything that belongs in marriage only within marriage and not before marriage. And so not before that covenant that makes you husband and wife, not before that agreement. And so if you haven't done that, if the first thing that you're putting on the table, instead of, you know, forming an attachment and a relationship with each other ahead of time, if the first thing that you've done is made this covenant, you need some time to form that attachment. You need to prepare a place to live together.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually something Yeshua said when he left. He said, I go to prepare a place for you. That's part of the betrothal idea, is that he's going to go and get ready. And so for the groom to have time to get a physical place ready, for time for their hearts to unite, their emotions to be attached to each other, so that the moving in is not something very awkward.
Mm-hmm. To get to know each other.
Yeah, to get to know each other ahead of time is the purpose of this. And I mean, even a lot of times the bride, creating her wedding dress or gathering together the things that she's going to need to keep house.
And in some ways, you can't all do all this preparation. You could say, well, you should prepare all that before you get betrothed. And you can to a certain extent, but until you've actually met your bridegroom and you he's opened up enough to you to know what he wants and what he likes, it's hard to prepare in a good way. Right. Like, oh, I didn't know you were going to be into football. I'm going to study up on football a little bit then.
Or, oh, my spouse is actually going to be in a wheelchair. That totally changes things.
I'm going to have to redo my living room. Yeah.
Or, you know, now I need to learn sign language. You know, whatever it might be that is going to be different about this individual, mm-hmm. you know.
Then you may have imagined your spouse would be.
Right.
Oh, we're going to live in a totally different part of the world than I imagined. I'm going to have to get ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. Be a missionary or whatever it's going to be.
So that kind of plays into what actually happens before betrothal, which we will talk about a lot more in other episodes. But right. really, in our mind, biblical betrothal not only covers the betrothal itself, but the way you interact as males and females before betrothal.
Right. Betrothal, the making of the covenant, is really supposed to be the first, you know, that initial step in the marriage process. And the forming of a relationship is supposed to be after that. Again, yeah, we'll talk about that in other videos.
That's what you were emphasizing, is that it's so necessary to have a period of a betrothal, because when you're doing it the way we think the Bible is promoting when it comes to men and women interacting, you're not really supposed to be in a one-on-one relationship before you are fully committed. So that means you're either going to be marrying as strangers,
yeah.
or just like distant friends, or you're going to be you need that time to get to know each other. We call it the betrothal period.
Right. And I mean, for some couples, that could be pretty short. There could be already a lot of things already ready. There could already be, you know, they could already know each other pretty well.
They could be good at letting their walls down. That can make a difference,
I know, too. A couple of cases where the families had been close since they were babies. And so they knew each other quite well when they moved to the betrothal. They still took a little bit of time, usually at least a month. I've never seen anyone that didn't say that it was hard, that didn't take at least a month
to be ready to wed. Mm-hmm. And wed is short for wedding.
Right.
The wedding, that's where you move in together.
Right. So from, and I mean, even the wedding ceremony and the wedding reception is two parties that have been slid right up next mm-hmm. to each other. In history, you'd have the ceremony, the betrothal, the covenant making, separated by a month or more before the wedding party, which is what we have in a wedding reception thing, where we celebrate their coming together.
Mm-hmm. When they would get all the bride and her stuff together and all the groom and his stuff together, and they'd actually put them all together. Before mm-hmm. that, they were husband and wife, but living apart.
Yeah. And we even see that in with Joseph and Mary,
mm-hmm.
that he's already her husband, she's already his wife, but the angel says, go ahead and go take your wife. Then Joseph, her husband, went and took his wife. And so they were apart while husband and wife, and then they went together
mm-hmm.
in the taking.
But yeah, again, if you are confused about any of the things we're saying, then please just leave us a comment or contact us through our website or through Facebook mm-hmm. or Instagram, and we'll try to answer any of your questions you have as soon as we can get to them. Or you can listen to more of our podcast, and you can find videos by us on YouTube as well that hopefully can explain questions if you're in a hurry and we don't get back to you right away. So we have the agreement making, we have a father giving in marriage, we have a bride price. These are all things that we see in the scripture about getting married, about how what makes you a husband wife, what makes you biblically betrothed.
And we have a time period between the covenanting and the wedding, or mm-hmm. the consummation, the moving in together.
Yep, the betrothal period. And then we have the wedding itself. Yeah. It's that simple, right?
It is pretty much. Now, one area that can often get confused is people say, okay, so engagement. I got engaged, therefore, you said it was an agreement. I agreed that I'm going to marry them, therefore I'm betrothed. And that's not quite true. We actually have a video specifically on this topic on YouTube, and we've had to answer this question quite a few times, but so I'll go ahead and mention it here, is that when you get engaged, you're saying, I will marry you in the future. You're mm-hmm. not saying, we are husband and wife. You're saying, I will become your husband and wife later.
Usually so, thinking at the wedding celebration.
Right, usually with mm-hmm. a future ceremony in mind. And when you've got a future ceremony in mind for this, making this covenant, that's not a betrothal. That's an engagement. when you actually have made the covenant and you say, I currently am your husband, I currently am your wife, versus mm-hmm. I will become your husband, I will become your wife. Those are two separate things. When you're saying, I am husband, when we are husband and wife, that is a betrothal. That is a covenant. When we're saying in the future, that's an engagement. Now, an engagement, if you promise to someone and they, you know, you need to get released from that, really, in order for that to be broken off. And if you made this engagement, then you should, especially, I mean, you should follow through and say, well, we're engaged, but we really should be betrothed.
Mm-hmm.
Then go ahead and get betrothed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be fancy. I've known people that have basically said, okay, we're supposed to marry each other. We know we're supposed to be husband and wife. We'll go ahead and get betrothed today. And so they ran out, grabbed a few flowers, grabbed, you know, some food, threw together a little feast with the two families and witnesses, and they said they made their I take you as my husband right there that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to do it, because it allows all of that building of the relationship to happen after that.
Yeah, and there's no reason really to delay just to have a fancier betrothal ceremony. In some ways it can get, I suppose the biggest problem you can run into is just building relationship prematurely. Because once you've given your word, like if the man proposes and she says, I accept, and they both go, okay, I'm your husband, I'm your wife, yay. It gets messy if you don't make that official soon.
Right. And sometimes, you know, making it official can be as easy as recording a quick video of I take you and you share it with your friends or something like that. So everyone knows, oh yeah, this is real. This is a real thing. I knew a couple that immediately called all their friends on the phone and said, hey, we're husband and wife. Another good way to say, you know, to make sure that you have witnesses to back you and say, this is what we're doing, and have a covenant.
Side note, I wouldn't exactly just say we're husband and wife. There is a reason for saying betrothed, because yeah. Otherwise people think you've already moved in together, which is quite sudden and not very kind to your... Even if you're ready to do that yourselves, that's quite sudden for relatives and stuff. Another good reason for the betrothal is it takes a little while for your family and friends to adjust their brains to, okay, now these people are together. This is a husband and wife.
Oh, that's a good point. And so, yeah, even if you understand husband and wife means betrothed, not mm-hmm. wedded, a lot of times you do need to explain we're betrothed.
Mm-hmm. Biblical betrothal, what we're talking about, it requires making an agreement. It says, I am your husband, I am your wife. So, and God is your witness to that. And hopefully you get other witnesses too. That's very beneficial. They are there to hold you accountable. They're there to protect your reputation. They're there to celebrate with you. Yeah. It's not a secret to get married. It's a joyous thing.
Yeah.
Your relationship has changed in a major way. You're doing something that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Yeah.
This is an important life change you've made. You want people to know that. The father of the bride has given his approval.
Yep.
He's not become an obstacle to this. He gives her a marriage, as the Bible puts it.
Yep.
The bride price, if there is one, has been paid. And that can just be anything. I know some churches have made a rule about how much has to be paid, but the Bible doesn't really say specifically that you have to pay a certain amount. You could go with what it says is the amount required mm-hmm. in a seduction, but I don't know that that was the price always through all time, that, like, you know, we see other prices being paid. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that was everybody has to do that. I've seen betrothals where the man gave a ruby because she's far above rubies. I've seen pearls. I have seen silver. That's what you gave
mm-hmm.
for me. And then of course there are many betrothals where there was nothing given, unless you want to count an engagement ring or something.
Right. That's really common.
Then the betrothal period is for the man and woman who have become husband and wife to get comfortable with each other and know each other.
And make practical preparation.
So that they can be wedded and move in together. The marriage mm-hmm. Celebration happens. And then they have that party. And that can be small, too. It doesn't have to be, you know, a $20,000 celebration. It can be a simple, you know, get together with your friends and say, hey, it's our wedding. We finally get to move in together. It's a time you've been looking forward to at that point, hopefully.
Yeah.
If the betrothal period is too short and you started off as distant friends before, I have noticed that it's a little hard for the bride and groom to fully celebrate because they're still nervous around each other.
Yeah.
a little bit of awkwardness is going to be expected if you're virgins. I mean, that's going to just happen.
Yeah.
But I would advise at least a month, if not more, if you're not starting off already very good friends.
Yeah. And it's usually pretty easy to tell within a betrothal, once you get started in it a few days, a few weeks, how long you're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're making rapid progress, then you might say, okay, so we're not going to need more than a couple months. If it's slower, you might set a date 6 months out or something like that.
Yeah, for Americans, there's not usually a lot of practical things that have to be done. I don't know what it was like in the Bible times, but...
Now you're living together. Now you're married.
Mm-hmm. Now you're married, yeah. And that's would be the terminology that I would advise, is when you say you become husband and wife by covenant, I would say betrothed. Or you could just say we're husband and wife by covenant. It depends on what you want to... how much you want to explain to people. I mean, at the very least, when you say betrothed, people usually understand you're in a very serious engagement.
Yeah.
Which is close to what you are in, but it's not quite accurate to the Bible's way of putting it.
And then married is the term that is used in the New Testament for a couple that is at their consummation or after it. You know, that they've already had their wedding and they've moved in together.
Mm-hmm. They've celebrated their wedding feast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for listening. And we hope you tune in for future episodes. And again, if you have questions, please contact us. We like to answer questions. We'd rather that than have you misunderstand us and go and, you know, say, these people are crazy. Because, I mean, we might be crazy, but we do carefully study the Bible and what it says about it. And we think we also studied history about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have done our research, but we do want to be caught in any mistakes, and so we can correct those before we continue to make more resources.
Yep, and so be sure and check out our other resources. They're on betrothalandwedding.com and then on a bunch of different social media under Betrothal Guys.